time for The Daily Review, a podcast dedicated to reviews and discussion of TV, movies, and books. Look for us at Daily Review on Facebook and Twitter and dailyreview.com on the web. That's DaleyReview.com. This is Paul Daly here with my wife, Caroline.
Hey, guys.
And tonight we're here to discuss the fifth episode of The Mist from Spike TV. This one is called The Waiting Room. But who is waiting in this one? I mean, obviously there's a waiting room with the hospital setting. Do you get the idea that there was some other metaphorical waiting happening here?
Ooh, I mean, I could go into all kinds of wacky stuff. Let's save the title to the end.
This is the kind of episode that now that they've shown it to us, I am a little sore at the showrunner for not having run more episodes this way. I think
Do tell, why?
Having the kind of set the mystery up ahead of time and then expose the backstory that fills in the blanks later could have been used. I mean, we have a large cast. They could have made it a lot like Lost, but they didn't. I think this is probably going to be the one time.
You know? Oh, really? So you think this will be the only time? I think that we're actually starting to get into this exact part right now, going more into each location and each character and really give them like a lot more information. Obviously, Lost was very specific, like one character-centric situation. Mm-hmm. And they don't seem like they're going to do that. But I mean, obviously, this was hugely Kevin and Eve-centric, discussing their backstory. So we have this flashback that runs, it's sort of like peppered throughout the entire show. So we're going to talk about the flashback as one chunk. Figure out, where does this play into where we are now? So it starts off with Kevin and Eve, and Alex is about 6 years old, according to the credits. They are apparently just moving back to town, or at least I should say they're just moving into this house.
Yeah, big question marks, because Eve apparently has never seen it. At least she acts like she's never seen it.
Yeah, like Kevin gives her a tour of the home that he's already a lot settled into, which goes back to previous podcasts where I said, like, I felt like this maybe was a family home of his, or maybe we had said inherited it, because it just kind of seems like the kind of thing where Kevin knows an awful lot about it and has a comfort level that seems way more than Eve. It doesn't seem like a house they're both moving into, but it also doesn't seem like this is his house that like he's always lived in. You know, they're obviously moving in.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the vibe that I get. And I have to say, it was a beautiful home. Like, that was a very picturesque location. I loved that, those windows and everything. I could definitely see where there'd be that wow kind of feeling. It really is.
But do people buy homes like that anymore? I mean, this is a setup for all kinds of horror movies, right? Where the family's just coming into town and they have somehow bought a house sight unseen. And they're like, well, we'll see when we get there. And it turns out to be, you know, the poltergeist house or something. Does that still happen? Really? I mean, have you ever talked to anybody that's like, no, I've never seen it, but I'm moving in.
Ugh. I mean, not much. I mean, I don't think, especially not in this day and age of internet and, you know, all the web pictures and everything, like to have never seeing the house at all seems weird. But honestly, I don't think this family moved into town like that. I mean, obviously we know they have a history in this town. Eve and Mike and Kevin and all of them grew up here in some way.
It's something that they've alluded to.
It's a little sketchy to me. Here's some parts that are a little disjointed for me that I can't quite figure out. Kevin seemed very comfortable with the home. Eve was being told about this house and being toured and walked around, and she was very euphoric, very happy. Like, this was all very brand new to her. But then there were all these elements where, like, it's old hat. You know, her history as a party girl and the fact that she had partied with Kevin's brother, Mike, and there was some history there. And then there was this whole portion about how Mike was, like, actively harassing her while she was teaching.
Yeah.
Which would imply that was happening locally. It's not like Mike, like, moved with them or something. And so, you know, I mean, she went so far as to give like different units that she was teaching. It wasn't like, it was the first day I was teaching and Mike was such a jerk. She's like, and then when we covered the Scarlet Letter, you know, this happened. And it was like, oh my goodness, like Mike's been harassing her for a while, you know?
Right.
But this is the first day she's ever seen the house. Like, I don't understand. Where do they live? How do they live? Were they in this town? Were they not? How did this work? I'm a little confused. The main information, though, that we got, of course, Kevin's brother, Mike, was absolutely a part of Eve's past. And the hunch we had all along that these were not the biological parents of Alex. I feel very vindicated that, like, yep, totally not. Our hunch was completely confirmed. Kevin is not the father of Alex. We know that. But I would like to submit that Mike was probably the father of Alex.
That seems right. I mean, if this show lasted long enough to answer that question and it was some other random dude, there would be no payoff.
It can't be random. That. I'll tell you who the only other dude it could be, which would make this extra gross.
Connor.
Which would make Jay and Alex half siblings extra, extra horrible.
Yeah.
That would be the only other person in my mind, because we've seen Mike and Connor hang out together and we know they like knew each other back in the day. So they probably did hang out together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll put my money on Connor just to be extra disgusting.
Ooh. I guess Jay, the QB, we could reason that he is at least Alex's age, but probably more if he's starting QB and she's this wide-eyed, you know, girl in love with QB, but maybe not. I mean, we're basically implying that Connor was messing around with Eve and his wife at like the same time.
Sure, but think about it like this. What if they were all young? Connor was the quarterback of the football team kind of guy, or the bad guy, whatever, along with Mike and these other guys, right? And they said they were a grade above them, right? So Kevin was like the younger brother. And if Eve was like hanging out with all these guys too, then maybe they graduated 6 months later. Connor marries his wife. They have a baby, you know, and Jay and Alex could have been in the same grade still. You know, all that could have still worked out. But he would have been like a senior graduating, whatever. Eve getting pregnant as a junior would have been a scandal, you know, as opposed to Connor just moving on with his life. Like, I don't know that would have looked insane. And I think it could have happened. That whole part there that, you know, he was not the bio dad. I mean, it was, again, massively confusing because they're giving this vibe like this is a brand new couple in a brand new house with a brand new family and all this. The kid is six.
Now,
why are you're just deciding like to retread that ground?
With the person that dropped her off, that was Benedict, right?
Yeah.
Next door neighbor Benedict.
Right.
So again, if you are just moving into this house, you're leaving your kid with the next door neighbor
man
while you move in. This is the only recourse you have.
It is really confusing because, again, you know, Connor has known Natalie for a while, which means that Natalie and Benedict have lived there for a long time. I mean, because Connor and Natalie had that whole bonding moment where Connor at the church was saying she's always been a little off, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. Connor clearly knew. Okay. So to me, that establishes that we know that Connor and Mike and all that whole crew were together as youngsters, right? Which means Natalie had been around, right? So that family had been there too at that house this whole time too. And so I kind of felt like, again, this is just like Kevin's either childhood home or family's vacation home or now, something.
Right. If it was a family home of some sort.
Then they knew Benedict for a long time.
Then they would have known him. Mm-hmm. It would that. Right. Makes sense.
Then it wouldn't be so weird. And that's basically the stuff that only makes sense here is like, this can't be a fresh house. But why is it a fresh house to Eve? It would make sense. We could say, oh, well, maybe they just got married. Maybe they've only been married like 2 years or something. But then the fact that he wasn't her father can't be on the table. That can't be like, let's not tell Alex. You just weren't around.
The jig would already be up.
Well, and it would be so completely unnecessary. I mean, you're just her stepdad. Like, you wouldn't need a charade about the whole thing. This backstory was informative in some ways. Like, I understood the dynamic between why Kevin and Mike had such a strained relationship and their nastiness. And of course, we get more of that information between Mike and Kevin later in the hospital. But I also felt, you know, we understood a lot more about Kevin and Eve's relationship. This whole concept that Eve had been this girl who is really wild, and somehow Kevin was this like calming, knight in shining armor kind of guy. But I also kind of got the heebie-jeebs from the way that they worked together. Like the part when she says, well, I was really weak when we met. And I really needed you. And he got all like, but I'm much stronger now. And he got all like hurt looking. That's kind of a weird response to someone being like, I was in really bad shape and I met you and now I'm stronger. And that other person shouldn't be like, oh man, I hoped you'd have been weak like forever and ever. Like it seemed like he would, you're amazing. You've grown so much since we met. Like, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But he actually seemed like he like legit needed to play the part of having this wounded bird wife. So her being stronger bizarrely didn't suit him. It didn't really suit the relationship.
Well, and he seems to want to govern their interaction in this way that supports that model.
Tell me more.
When he said, it was very strange language. I mean, this isn't the way people talk. That's the way we use each other, he told her.
I know. Oh my God. Okay. So yeah, when they're in bed and he's basically trying to say,
tell me your secrets.
Yeah. Tell me what's going on, which again, you've been together how long that you wouldn't have had a conversation like this already? And that
if the girl is six, you can assume, and she doesn't have a memory of someone that's not her dad being her dad, then they hooked up maybe when she was pregnant or very small baby, right? So that means that he's been in the picture 5 years-ish. They haven't had this talk yet.
I think it's weird.
And they've already moved into this house.
It's honestly got to be like when she was pregnant, because the important part of no one knowing that Kevin's not Alex's dad is that no one could know that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't just all go around and say, let's just all agree not to tell Alex. Like, they would all know if, like, as a town, as a community, as a whatever, they would all know these two birds hadn't met yet. And mm-hmm. she already had a baby. So clearly he's not the dad, you know? So it's like they had to have met earlier, which means, I mean, we're banking on 6 years that they've been hanging out together in a way that makes it believable that Kevin is the father. So. Yeah, again, super weird. But then you're right. I can't imagine ever using language with one another that would sound like anything other than things like, you know, I'm here for you. You can talk to me.
That's the way we support each other.
Of course not. That's the way we use each other. I agree. Like pretty.
There were a few clunkers in the dialogue department this week.
I don't think that was an accident. I mean, I don't think that that was poor choice of wording.
No?
No. I think this was telling about the nature of their relationship. I think that he is, at his core, not a very strong individual. And in order to feel like a big, strong man, you've got to get a very wounded bird. Okay?
Okay.
As the bird heals up and is willing to even be on par with you, that kind of wasn't what you signed up for. You wanted someone weaker than you. And he's not an overly strong guy. So like if on the...
It makes him very uncomfortable to be overshadowed.
And she has that growth ability. So in assertiveness, Eve, certainly we've seen her now, has the ability to be a 10 on the assertive scale. I think Kevin at his max is like a 6 in a natural place. But because she was so wounded and in such a bad place and had a baby and all this kind of stuff and really needed someone, then his 5 or 6 looked like a 15 million, you know, and he could accept that. But as she grew and got stronger and obviously got a career and her child was doing well and they were in a relationship, well, she was like going up the ladder of being able to take care of herself and being okay. It makes me unnerved. I mean, it really makes me feel like this is a very unhealthy relationship. I mean, it goes back to that episode when she said, I'm glad he's not here at the mall. Like, it's kind of like, ooh, you know, I kind of get it. You know, he's a little bit of a strange guy, to be honest with you. Anyone that you're in a relationship with, where if you've had any kind of growth and they're anything other than supportive and like congratulatory about that, that feels bad. You know, one major callback that we had during this flashback was the red balloons. How did you feel about the fact that Kevin had clearly created this entire bedroom for Alex alone?
Very impressed with the paint job. I assume that that was not wallpaper. I assume that that was just some sort of really magical paint job. Because if you saw that was
neat.
Overlapping multiple colors following some tree forest type design. But then there was also like a gradient of white up from the floor Wow.
Wait. Say that whole thing again.
I can't say that whole thing again.
Trees with a gradient of white coming across it.
Oh, looks misty, you mean?
What? Kind of creepazoid, right? With the red balloons all up above.
Mm.
Ooh, I think that was like a tiny little microcosm of what we're now dealing with. Because we were just talking with someone on Facebook, and maybe it was even Twitter too, about the idea that how come every time they go into the mist, it's like they're always in like the forest. All of a sudden they're on Main Street, right? Natalie and Benedict come out of the library. They're on Main Street, yet no, they're in the woods. What? Why are they in the woods? Why are there only trees? Why can they only see trees? So the painting being trees with like this white haziness and the red balloons on the ceiling in Alex's bedroom, I think is crazy.
Interesting.
Foreshadowing. See, in a flashback way.
Yeah. It took our discussion here for me to really link that up. Because at first I just saw red balloons. Oh, then you must be just shouting out to it. Why not? You know, totally it. But no, that's just probably like a tiny fraction of why they chose red balloons here.
I think the main thing for me, not having a bunch of Stephen King history in my brain, is, of course, the fact that she used only red balloons at the mall to send out their messages. Yeah. And when you think about that, really, it would be impossible to just get red balloons at that florist place. And like they would have been hard up to get as many balloons as they could to send out. So the fact that all of them only sent out red balloons is like really, really unbelievable. So that was a huge link.
Yep. Well, even when Alex was doing that, I had the hunch that she was sending those specifically for her dad to be able to find her.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just some random, I hope someone finds this message in a bottle. It was, I want my dad to find these.
I completely agree. But everybody else sent out balloons too. So if she had just sent out a red one and just her to dad, that's cool. And I totally get it. And then if, you know, every other person had come out and there was like a purple balloon and a pink balloon and a blue balloon, because that would have been normal of what the florist would have had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they were all red balloons, and then it was all red balloons he used in her bedroom. I mean, I just think that that's like, da-da-da, major symbolism. I have a question. There were a couple lines, like we said, back in that flashback that stuck with me. Thinking about this relationship with the dad between Kevin and Alex and how they're supposed to be, you know, really linked and it's so wonderful and so great. What did you think about the whole part when Kevin says to Eve, I would do anything for you, anything?
I think it's foreshadowing the changes he needs to make. Like we mentioned a couple of weeks ago when she said that she was glad that he wasn't there, it was because she didn't need this kind of confining guy that's not willing to stick with her and act when he needs to act and all this other kind of stuff, because she needed to be this very assertive, you know, alpha Eve, right? And we guessed that he needed to go through a lot of stuff in order to get to the point that he could be of any use to her in the mall or after them all or whatever, right? Combined with whatever else happens in this episode, I think that statement is like kind of his mission statement, I guess, for Resolve, that he does actually have it in him. It's just not going to come very easy.
For whatever reason, in the same way that you took that bedroom scene of him saying that, this is the way we use each other. When he said, I would do anything for you, I feel like if it just ended like that and they hugged and they were like, yay. And she'd say something like, I'd do anything for you. Yay. Then it seemed like it would have been all on the up and up. But then when he added that extra anything, it just felt very serial killer, you know, in a very strange, like, you're my pretty pet kind of Tommy Boy kind of moment. Like, I pet it. And it's like, it's really like there's something very unnatural about the way that he wants to keep her like this weird little, you know, pet. You know, it's just weird. I'm getting a strange vibe.
Since he's so far been painted as the protagonist, I'm willing to accept him on those terms. One of the protagonists. He's not the protagonist. Don't misread me there. There's kind of an ensemble of protagonists. So I'm willing to accept him on those terms, that he isn't also other kinds of super piece of shit on the side.
I don't think he has to be like a piece of shit. I just think he has to be, I think he's psychologically kind of messed up. I think there's some parts to him that are not this just like super calm. You know how it's like, okay, when you have a serial killer, what do the neighbors always say?
He was so normal.
He was such a nice guy. He was so nice. He never bothered anyone. Like he has that kind of like persona to him that is also just a little bit weird. You know, there's just something strange about him. So heading over to our hospital location, we had Kevin, Adrian, Mia, and Brian finally make it over there, which was amazing. I didn't know if we would stay out on the journey for a while to get to the hospital. Did you think we would get there so quick from the gas station?
Well, yes and no. We know those towns are very small, so no one else has been able to successfully drive. So
I know, it's like amazing, right?
Yeah. You know, while they were driving, Mia yells, "Careful!" And then she yells, "Faster!" Like, how can you do both? How can you, when you can't see out the windows?
Like, it's so weird. I hate driving in mist or like fog or anything, you know?
Yeah.
I hate it. It's like the worst feeling.
So we're going to approach the Adrian story first at the hospital.
I feel very uncomfortable with everything going on with Adrian. And I want to make it clear, it has nothing to do with his sexual preference. It has to do with how he's going about things. I felt like the whole bathroom scene, that was so uncomfortable for me. I mean, what did you think?
I don't even know if this actually happens. The idea of a person who's maybe closeting their true sexuality, then having someone else kind of pull it out of them. But I imagine this is kind of just sort of like what people have in their minds, just being kissed in a way it's unwelcome. So it's an assault, basically. If someone touches your body and you don't want them to, and it's certain kinds of touching, then that's regarded as assault. That's what happens to this kid. And then he retaliates. He beats up Adrian after that. And then Adrian comes at him again.
It's so unexpected. I mean, honestly, like, I believed you when you said, you know, maybe Adrian did that in order to get beat up because he's going to use the fact that he's beat up to get something else, to move forward in some other way. Like, not unlike, you know, asking to be baptized from the priest. Like, he's using this situation. He knew if he kissed this boy that the boy was going to punch him in the face. Like, that was, like, so obviously going to happen. I felt so uncomfortable with this because of everything you're saying about the forcing himself upon this kid. I just felt like no matter what was going on, no matter what their dynamic was, no matter if they had been together in the past, no matter what had happened, this scenario right now was a very stressful, chaotic, crazy time. You're in a public bathroom. You kiss the guy. He says no. He's not interested. He beats you up. And you come at him again. I just feel like, I mean, it just goes to the point where, like, Adrian doesn't have boundaries that are very respectful, I feel like. I am concerned that, you know, I said that he was absolutely on the top of the list for me of someone who probably attacked Alex, but now having actually seen him be this assertive and this, like, aggressive with somebody, it's more unnerving than me just making the assertion that, like, oh, I think he probably was the one to attack her. But to actually watch him come at that boy again, I was like, oh my God. Like, even if that boy was somebody that he had a crush on, and then he just knew this boy also had a crush on him, and they totally had sex in the past and blah, blah, blah. Regardless, like, no means no. The guy was like, get off me, stop.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like the whole thing just, it really grossed me out. His whole pushing, like you said, it was an assault. Like, you know what? When it started too for me, it started when he was kind of skulking around, lurking after the boy. And when the boy goes in the bathroom, I mean, you've told me if a guy you know goes into the bathroom, you kind of like give him a second. You don't like run up on him, and you don't take the
urinal. You definitely don't take the urinal
right next to him.
If it's the child urinal that's open, you use that one as opposed to going right next to somebody else.
All of it had that really stalkery, really inappropriate, really like you're in this other person's personal space. The whole thing. I think the only reason why it's even remotely gray area for us is because it was a gay interaction. Because if it was a heterosexual interaction, we would be screaming rape. We'd be saying he absolutely assaulted that kid. He absolutely, you know, had intimidated the person into having sex with him or whatever, you know, like that absolutely wasn't okay. And the fact that it was a gay couple is the only reason why I feel like we're being a little more like, well, I don't know. Was it okay? Was he just forcing him out of the closet? Like, No, I think that was 100% inappropriate. The kid said no. He pushed back on him. He said stop. You know, like, yeah. I feel really bad about Adrian. He's a really yickety character to me.
Yickety is great word.
It is not. I mean, I want to be super clear. I don't care if he was gay, heterosexual, or otherwise. Honestly, I do not care. But I feel very like he's so aggressive and he's
capable
manipulating people.
Yes, right.
It scares me. Like, he's a very scary person.
Right.
He uses the fact that he thinks other people perceive him to be
weak.
Yeah, and like passive, and oh gosh, weak is one word, but it's almost like he's like unassuming. You know, like, oh, I'm over here just struggling with my little self. You know, I'm just not so sure about what I'm doing. I'm wearing makeup and I'm kind of this goth kind of kid or whatever. But in reality, like, no, he has more of a plan than most of the people, most of the adults even. You know, he's always doing something. How did you feel when he was out in the waiting room?
Right.
He's sitting there with the car keys on the seat next to him, which was weird.
Because, you know, you normally take those out of your pocket when you're sitting down, right? No, you don't. You leave them in your pocket.
You think it's a skinny jeans situation?
Mm.
But he had a hoodie on. He could easily put it in the hoodie pocket. Or you just hold it in your hand. I mean, you just don't put it down on the seat next to you. I think it's weird. But okay, what did you think of when Mia's like, hey, what happened to you? Clearly talking about the bruises on his face. And he says, oh, I just had sex.
He said that to stop the questions. I mean, he says outrageous things as a defense mechanism to get kind of left alone, I think.
So did he just have sex with that kid? Or did they just kiss in the bathroom or what? I took it like he had sex with that kid.
I did too, as a way. I mean, I think he gave the honest answer as a way to do what I just said, to make it be like, I don't want to talk about that. You wouldn't expect it. Obviously, they're in the middle of an emergency. People are dying left and right.
He's a kid, you know, like there's nothing about him that comes off like, oh, you're like a, you know, a sexual adult in this world, you know. So you just being like, oh, I just nailed someone in the bathroom's like, oh, good job. It's like, you're a child, you know, like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well,
and it could just be a way to get an answer or a response that's like, OK, yeah, whatever. You're not being serious.
Yeah, I'll definitely go with that. I do feel like maybe it was just trying to come off like sarcastic. Although now I'm all like, did they have sex or didn't they have sex? Which I don't want to know. But it's like, I just want to know if he was being sarcastic or if he was being serious, you know, like what just happened? I'm so confused by that bathroom scene. I don't know what happened. I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. Adrian, that is as big of a role as he has in this episode. And it is just confounding to me. I think it goes to the whole point of he's got a lot more that he is capable of than people are assuming. And he is just somebody to keep your eye on, you know?
Gives Adrian another person out there who, you know, this poor kid may be like the guy from American Beauty who hates himself for who he is. And rather than face that, he'd rather just kill you, you know,
or just go running into the mist or whatever, you know? I mean, that's what seems to be what's going on around here, you know?
Yeah. Madness.
So speaking of madness here, Mia must have felt like she lost her ever-loving freaking mind here. I cheered so loud when they first got there and she is blaming Kevin for Brian. Oh my God, Paul, how absolutely mind-numbing was it to have Kevin be like, I don't understand. I didn't shoot him.
Mia has adopted kind of the Shane mindset from the first season of The Walking Dead, where he's like, this is how it all is now. You know, how it was doesn't matter anymore because this is how it is and this is how we have to act in order to live. And she's clicked over into that mode in day one. Day two, I guess. Kevin is still thinking of how they were outside the mist and that those rules are things that he's following.
That very much reminds me of not just Shane, but of Nick and like the whole concept on fear of like, you know, the junkie or the whatever was like the first one to accept this new world as like the new normal and just flow right into it. Like no big thing. Mia definitely seems like that person. But how did you feel about the fact that Kevin saw no connection between his inability to pull the trigger and the fact that Brian got shot by Clay, what did you think of that?
I think Kevin saw it more like, well, Brian might still just pull through and then no one's dead. But if I shot Clay, then for sure someone would have been dead. I'd rather bet on probably both living versus one definitely dead.
Okay, well, you're giving him a lot more credit because I am giving him the ostrich head in the sand. Like, whatever do you mean? I had nothing to do with that situation. And it's just like, what? I mean, you had the means to stop that whole situation where Brian didn't have to get shot at all. Like, we could have dealt with Clay right at the very beginning, but your lies and you got him into this tizzy where then he thought we were extra lying about his son and making up a story. And Kevin played into this from go. From the minute Clay came in and they lied to him, mm-hmm. you know, that all culminated into Brian getting shot. And Kevin was all in it, you know, the whole time, every choice that he made down to not pulling the trigger. It really stank of Kevin, like, really having very little concept of, like, what role that he should play in other people's lives, what role he is influencing the situation, and how, like, kind of weirdly hands off he can be at times. You know, like, I'm the leader of the group, but I'm not responsible for anything. Mm. Which is it? You know, like, you can't have it both ways. It's, mm-hmm. just, it's just impossible. So I don't know. That felt really crazy. And I really appreciate that they had a character call him out on it. So I got the idea that Brian and Mia, you know, had a friendship brewing, but did you think it had become so much more than that?
No, it doesn't seem reasonable that someone with amnesia and someone who
was actively going through withdrawal?
Withdrawal and is a kind of person who doesn't like to form attachments at all, that in just 2 days of hanging around each other, it's time to start, you know, thinking about our future together, you know?
Well, especially during this, like, apocalyptic time.
Right.
Like, they're like wooing each other?
Like, I am recovering from my leg wound, but I still have time to pet your hair nicely.
It was strange. I'm not sure. I mean, I know we had to get the idea that they had grown really attached to each other. That was a huge part of this. I think for me, that was like a big theme of this whole show, this episode, was attachment. And the idea of having these really unhealthy attachments and how people became attached to one another. And how they can get kind of twisted up. Like, again, when one person grows or when some more information is put into the equation, how those attachments are suddenly very inappropriate or just flat out, like, freaky now. You want to, like, run the other way. So that's basically what happens with Mia here. How surprised were you about this whole Brian sitch? I did not expect that this is how this was all going to come out.
His amnesia has always been fishy. Now, I mean, there's a lot of mystery there in terms of, well, why did he attack the real Brian? Or how come he doesn't remember who he actually is? Why did he change clothes? What was going on there? What is going on with Brian and what's his real name?
If he is the guy that, I mean, Brian Hunt, the new Brian Hunt, described a person who is a black man, 5'9", with a birthmark on his face. Now, we were watching it on iPad. It was too dark.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell in the lighting of the actual screen. I was like, does he have a birthmark on his face? Like, I cannot tell. I'm sure this is supposed to be blatant to us, whether it's him or not him, because mm-hmm. you would either see a birthmark or not see a birthmark. But I could not tell. The amnesia, Brian's name, if this is the guy who attacked him, was Jonah Dixon. He definitely seemed like by the end of this episode, when he walks into Brian's room and they kind of look at each other, there does seem to be recognition on our real Brian's face that this is the guy who attacked him.
Yeah, but I didn't get the sense that Jonah
remembered that.
Knew anything. I think he was confused that there was a person here who's file said his name on it.
Right. So it was all weird. I'm still with the idea that Jonah seems to have some sort of amnesia. He definitely seems like he's off about this whole thing. It kind of makes me wonder if he had been in the mist. You know how there's these people who are all confused and all freaked out?
I thought that at first, but
what if he was?
But then how the real Brian knew Jonah's name.
That's true.
Then I don't think he was just like conjured. And his answer to Mia about, she said, why did he attack you? He says, that answer's above my pay grade. That's a very army bullshit thing to say.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, questions about other fellow nationals, other Americans attacking you, that's way different. That means something else is happening. You don't get attacked, you know what I mean, by allies, basically, you know what I mean?
There definitely seems to be a lot about the mist and the way that it affects people that is still very unknown to us. I was trying to really pick up on all these kind of like periphery things that were going on. Before we get into Kevin's story, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the periphery things we were seeing. So like, you know, being a little confused about whether Jonah could have been involved with the mist, there was so much a part of this, you know, like when Mia went to the gift shop and she goes to pay and she sees that someone had like slit their wrist in the office and there was like blood everywhere. And there seemed to be like all these sort of like these strange moments. I guess we do need to talk about Kevin's story to really get into a lot of the details of it. But I thought there was more subtle layers of like how people are dealing with the mist and what is happening when they interact with the mist. There seems to be like a lot of information coming out. Let's talk about Kevin a little bit here. He seemed like he really took on Clay's role when he got there, walking around with the picture. That was like, oh my God, that's like deja vu, right? Where he's like, I'm looking for my wife and my daughter. Now, this is a very small town. Might you say even Alex? I'm looking for Eve Levitt and Alex, you know?
Right.
Do you think
And they apparently lived in that house about 8 to 10 years.
Yes. And this is like a hometown situation. They were able to, you know, basically get there in like 2 seconds from the gas station. So,
and Eve had no problem being recognized at the mall.
Or anywhere. And she, I mean, being a teacher and everything, of course. So that part was a little like, okay. How shocked were you that he found this other family member instead?
I was initially shocked, but then the way the story was crafted this week was, I think, pretty good, pretty better than the average so far. So making it Mike and then all the stuff that had to go down with Mike and then Mike's past relationship with Eve makes it so that it really had to be Mike.
I was super surprised that Mike was laying there. It shouldn't have surprised me because I just made the comment about being this local town. So of course it should be that people that they know, lots of people that they know should be there. Adrian runs into a school pal. Like everybody should be familiar on some level. Mike though, pulling back the blanket and showing this rebar wound. Ooch. You guys, this was a terrible episode for me to be eating vegetarian spaghetti. This was awful. It was a terrible dinner choice.
So Mike did not suffer random violence. He was on the receiving end of the mist, reading his mind and coming up with punishment.
I put personal terror.
Right, right. Just for him, in retribution for being an asshole for the rest of his life, beating up people when he was a kid, these people were there to shove rebar in his guts.
So freaky. And he said, they knew me. They said it was for Ricky Gustavo. And they knew all these details about him that they just couldn't know. That would fall under the Mia's whole experience of seeing her grandma. And again, it's very puzzling that somehow Jonah/Brian also saw grandma. Because, you know, if it was a personalized terror kind of situation, that doesn't seem like that would come into play. Unless now that we know it's Jonah, maybe it's going to turn out that Jonah did know grandma in some way. Maybe he was a neighborhood kid.
Well, I think there's personalized, but it's still conjured up. It's not in your head. You know what I mean? So it's there. And you could easily get in the way of someone else's personal terror.
When Mike noticed that there was a gun on Kevin's hip, I felt like he was being super strange and aggressive about the fact that he had the gun. Like he was like, oh, what? Like, you're so great about this gun. Did you get right away that he was trying to get Kevin to shoot him?
Yes.
What do you think about that? Was that like remotely reasonable in this moment?
No, but time seems to have been compressed a little because
it does seem fast, doesn't it?
Like, he was like, my medicine's about to wear out. And going back to my benefit of the doubt earlier about Kevin not wanting to shoot Clay because, you know, they might be able to save Brian even if he got shot, whatever. That's the same kind of initial hesitation, I think, that he was applying here. Like, well, what if a mist clears up and then we shoot you?
That's, of course, what I would think. And I'm kind of confused why no one has said that yet. Like, I would say that. If I was Kevin, I'd be like, Mike, this stuff rolled in an instant. It could roll out at any time. We need to hold on to hope that that's going to happen. Nobody has used that line yet. Not at all. Isn't that kind of surprising?
Yeah.
Nobody is banked on the idea like it could leave at any second. Why would we do something so drastic?
Mike's like, we still have 5 episodes.
I do agree with you that timing is very confusing because I don't know how long you could go with a piece of rebar in your guts before infection set in. I've got to think it's not very long. Not very long at all.
Well, it is probably days, though. It's not hours. I mean,
oh, yeah, definitely days. I mean, they were at the church and all these other places. So, I mean, I guess we do have, I'm guessing when he says my medicine and he keeps being very vague, do you think he just means antibiotics?
Well,
and painkillers.
Unfortunately, all the good stuff is not, they just keep it sequestered away in the east wing of the hospital, which has been overcome by mist. So all the good stuff's there, except for, I don't know, baby Tylenol or something.
Well, and now we're in the ER, so you'd think there would be plenty of pain medicine.
Right. They're not always maybe running not, down to the east wing.
Maybe
they're,
not antibiotics, though, to be honest with you, because you probably would like write a prescription or send them over. But this was not the area where you would keep people for a long time. So would it make sense for you to have like a lot of antibiotics, right? Hmm. You'd certainly have painkillers, though.
Yeah.
And you would think you would have some of those surgical things. Like, maybe not, like you were saying, they can't pull that rebar out because, you know, he'd bleed out. And they would need, like, a blood transfusion kind of situation. Totally made sense.
Yeah.
And the doctor, Dr. Bailey, confirmed that. You were right, Dr. Daly, that it definitely was. They couldn't pull it out. But in the ER, you wouldn't have, like, staples and stuff. I mean, just from, like, a head injury or, like, when I cut my finger and they had to sew stuff shut. Like, I didn't go to an OR. You know what I mean? Like, there was various parts where I was like, no, I mean, our kids have gotten stitches in the ER. We didn't go into an operating room. No, I mean, they didn't have rebar sticking out of their bellies.
No.
So that's like a whole different stitch, I guess. What did you think about this big fat plan of Kevin's that he was alone going to wheel his brother into an operating room and via walkie-talkie be walked through the surgery?
I thought that had a 0% chance of working.
I agree, Paul. And I mean zero. Zero. Okay. I feel like Daily Review has done a pretty kick-ass job. You guys, we don't have screeners further ahead of than you guys. We get to see it maybe a day ahead of you guys, but it is by no means do we get to see like all these episodes. And so I feel like our sleuthing work has been pretty kick-ass thus far. We haven't seen any spoilers. We're not out there looking at Reddit and all different things. Like, we're not out there. We're not reading. I don't know. I've never seen the movie. I don't know these characters from anyone. So the fact that we guessed some like non-bio dad and like this, I feel pretty darn good that we're doing pretty well here. So the fact that we guessed that it had a 0% chance of working, again, on the daily win side, that like, holy crap, this was nonsense. Can I just say that Kevin's surgical work really left something to be desired? I mean, just mashing the anti-clot thing and then just using the stapler, like kind of like I would if I was trying to quickly like upholster something and you'd come over and go, not like that. And you'd like smooth it all out and do it nicely. This kind of reminded me of like an electric staple gun moment that you and I may have had.
I don't know anything about surgery.
No?
But I think that if you get impaled with something, you can't, there's a thing called internal bleeding, right?
And yeah, just, I don't think you could just suture the outside skin and be like, all stay in there.
Yeah. Just well, keep it with all a bunch of like inside tissue in there, you know.
Well, it was anti-clotting.
Right.
Sponges.
Right.
But, which I assume that those sponges then are supposed to be like embedded with some sort of anti-clot medication. That's what I'm guessing they're saying.
I was guessing maybe the idea was to do whatever that stuff was in the OR and bring him back to the ER. And maybe there was something else that they could do there. But I mean, if you staple them up, then they're not taking those out right away just to deal with. This was just never going to work.
The whole thing seemed like if any listener
has a medical background of any sort, please just write into the show. Let us know exactly how inaccurate this was.
Okay, so the actual journey to the OR, though, there were some strange things that we saw. And we saw the mist doing things to Mike, and we saw the mist doing things have done things to people around us. So there was a lot of blood, like slip sliding around in blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I know we saw from Mrs. Garvey's like rah, 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 face, like definitely it can like rip things up, right? And then the whole, like, the nail beds on Mike, how they, like, started bleeding.
Yeah.
And then he was saying he couldn't feel his face. What was the mist doing?
I'm not sure, man. Is that what would happen to you if there was, like, bad pressure or something?
I was trying to think, like, would it be, like, a shock response? And I think you could, if he had said, I'm getting cold, and maybe if his nail beds had turned kind of blue, like maybe his oxygen sats were going down and he was like doing that. Like, and you know, he was like going into shock. That would be normal medical stuff. But they can't feel your face. I mean, I guess that could be like a numbing kind of feeling. I don't know. It was a strange combination of events. And he seemed like he was getting affected by the mist every time they were near it. It was very like had an instant effect on Mike instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that ultimate moment there when Kevin slides on the blood, right?
Yes. And the gurney capsizes.
Oh my God.
With his brother on top.
Seeing his brother flop onto the freaking floor, Paul. Oh my God. What did you think was going to happen? I thought anything could happen. Like
I thought
like
he would just bleed out. I didn't.
Or like his head could have bashed open or something, you know, because he was saying all this stuff. I can't feel my face. I don't know.
Because like, he ripped those open. You could see where guts might start to spill out. Shit. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes. Yes.
But that instead.
Seems very right. Like a calzone. Like.
So earlier this season. the guy with the moth tattoo died of a moth growing out of his body, right?
Yeah, it definitely peeped its face right out of his back.
And then the selfie guy was scared of roaches, and so he was like consumed with roaches, right?
Yeah.
So this guy, who has been in Kevin's world, has been a parasite to him, kind of harassing him, always being the tough older brother who never let his sensitive younger brother kind of just be himself. He always had to be kind of a dick to him.
Uh-huh.
He gets taken down by leeches, blood-sucking leeches. Do you think it's just kind of fits in there with
that? I'm trying to think of the different words. Okay, so like a leech, it does like suck the life out of you. So if you're like harassing someone, right?
Yeah.
You could like suck the life out of them, right? You can take them down basically by doing that. Also, this is going to be kind of a weird one, but like a lech, right? Like when you say it in that way, isn't that somebody who's like sexually more like a predator?
Somewhere on the pervert spectrum. Yeah.
The only reason why I say that is because of how he is like constantly calling Eve like a slut and saying all these kind of things that are like, obviously in a very sexual kind of way, you know, it's not just like, she's a jerk, you know, she said a lie about me or something. Like, he's always like, oh, she's loose. Oh, she's a whore. She's a slut. Like, it's very like, okay, so a lech is, like, if I actually looked it up, it said to act in a lecherous or a lustful manner. So a businessman leching after bimbos. That is the actual sentence in the dictionary. Businessman.
Very judgy.
Leching after bimbos. Jeez. Nice. Okay, so but it denotes a strong desire, particularly sexually, and that's most definitely what he is, right? I mean, he tells Kevin straight up, like, I wanted Eve. I mean, he is a lech. Like, he wanted her. He was desiring her, and Kevin got her, and that's what was the crux of their animosity with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm going with the leech, that whole area there, that whole thing.
And it's interesting how in that personal terror theory, the leeches were dropping on the ceiling. They were hitting Kevin, but they weren't really sticking. They were more like sliding off. But meanwhile, his brother was entirely leech, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. He was covered in them. That was really a gruesome death. I mean, you and I were, you're definitely not somebody who hides your eyes, but this was a situation where you were like, oh. I mean, it was gross, right? The surgery, all that. This was a pretty gruesome episode, right? I was like, damn, this was hardcore. There was a lot going on in this one. We had to turn down the sound several times. That's unlike us, you guys. Very unlike us.
Earlier this season, we had asserted that we thought that Kevin needed to go on this journey in order to kind of be worthy of meeting up with his family again. This, I feel, was the real first step. Unfortunately, it needed to be killing his brother, but having that wherewithal to decide to take a life was, unfortunately, in this mist world, a step he needed to take. Do you feel the same way?
Well, I was trying to think of back to that part where you said that, you know, that the leeches were not sticking to him and that they were getting onto, you know, his brother. And that this concept that we're really getting a grasp on this idea of your personalized terror. I kind of think for Kevin, him actually pulling the trigger was his personalized terror. Like, so you and I are looking at it, and I said this at the beginning, like, it's so weird, like, Kevin, not unlike Alex, is not being affected by the mist. Like, he seems to be able to run through the mist and run back and run through and, like, no big deal, you know, like, he's fine.
Yeah.
But yet here he is in a scenario that he is now turning into the person he would never want to be, you know, like they pointed out in the flashback, like, he's not a guy to throw a punch. He's not a guy to do anything. And all of a sudden now in this scenario, even though I know it's like a life and death crisis kind of situation, but it's like the mist got a backdoor way into ruining Kevin's psyche. You know, it's like by creating a scenario in which he has to pull the trigger, you know, like it is being forgiving or whatever to kill his brother. But he still killed his brother and he still pulled the trigger on a living person, you know, and so it's kind of like, I don't know if that's a very devilish Satan kind of way to do it. Like, that's fine. I'm not going to ask you to pull the trigger. I'm just going to put you in an impossible situation. And then when you pull the trigger, I'm just going to go, haha, I made you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, stop slapping yourself. You know, it's like they made it happen. Like, the mist did affect him and he is having this personal moment. I just can't figure out if I want to classify it as like growth or if it's like, you know, if he's being affected by the mist. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, is he being manipulated by the mist? Or because can you really call it growth to like be willing to kill someone? I'm not sure. I mean, I guess we would say that like he had to stop being like spineless, you know, but then maybe was this whole situation foolishness? Is this situation the exact thing that Eve would have said, do you see how he puts people in danger? Like, maybe Mike wasn't doing great, but he wasn't dying of leeches. He wasn't thrown off a gurney. He wasn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was dying quietly in a bed in a hospital. Where he was, and instead he died this gruesome, insane death.
Because Kevin insisted that he go on this crazy last ditch effort. It's a lot like moving to the house. If it was Kevin's crazy plan in both cases, right? In a way, both Eve and Alex suffer for Kevin's crazy plan to live in this house. Now, Mike, who knows if the mist was going to roll out tomorrow, they might have been able to fix things, right? He would have been in pain for a while. And I don't say that that's a non thing, but at least he could have come out alive at the other end rather than food.
There's just something funky about Kevin's decision making. And I feel like Eve is got the insider's track on it, you know? But I mean, I'm like definitely sniffing around like, you guys, I don't think that Kevin knows what's up. Now, if you had asked me, would you do anything you could to save your brother? I would say absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Radio surgery.
I mean, I could have talked myself through that scenario and said, like, once I pull out the rebar and like, I'm just going to like, this doesn't make sense. What about the internal bleeding? Like, doctor, what? Like, let's talk this through a little bit, you know? Like, I would have run in there and I would have gotten all the supplies and I would have brought them back to the doctor and I would have let someone who knows something actually handle it.
Right.
But I feel like actually taking the brother, you know, again, it's everything that Eve said earlier about like his decisions put people in danger. And then Mia, your lack of being able to do things, your inaction is killing people. It's like, oh my God, like, you know, all these people are who are closest to Kevin are telling us what's up.
Well, it's Mia. Kevin might have known this about himself, and that's why he needed a Mia to do things like hotwire cars.
Be like the heavy.
And now Mia has taken off. And if you look at the IMDb credits, the only people that they have in all 10 episodes are Eve and Kevin. Everyone else is just sort of like
spoiler alert, dude. I did not know.
Mia, they had only listed, as of last week, they had her listed as 4. So I'm sure this week it'll say 5, but they're not.
They're being tricky. I see.
They're not foreshadowing that she's around anymore, basically. But she may be. Who knows? Maybe she'll, you know, crash this car too, and then they'll run into her.
Okay. So after having gone through this entire experience with Kevin coming out the other side, I appreciate that. I'm not comfortable saying that it's growth, but I am comfortable in saying that he's had experiences now that have shown him sides of himself that he didn't know he had or he hadn't acted on before. So in those ways, I'll feel like he had, I don't know, I would not say a hero's journey, but I would say that he had some journey. He had some experiences outside of his norm that have exposed some amount of ability to see other sides of himself. For this particular situation, though, I kind of feel like he needs to actually have a remorseful moment of like, why did I take my brother in there like that? Why did I do that? When then ultimately I had to kill him in this ugly, awful way. Maybe I need to think differently about these decisions I'm making, which I don't think is going to happen, you know?
Mm-mm.
Because I think that whole experience, I don't think you get to chalk that up as a win for a hero's journey growth. You know, I feel like that was like a, oh no, like that was all a regrettable experience that you just, you thrusted upon your brother and everybody. The brother didn't want to do it. He wasn't saying, thank you, Kevin. He was like, this is crazy. Stop. What are you doing? You know, like, then the doctor was like, this is crazy. Stop. What are you doing? Like, nobody thought this was a great idea. So again, like, I don't know, listeners, do you guys chalk this up as like Kevin's big growth moment where it's like he was able to kill his brother now, so he did it? Or was this more like, God, this was just like another example of like him thinking he had all the right answers. And despite the fact that all these people around him are saying like, she's too young to handle parties, don't do it. Or like, this is crazy, you don't know how to do surgery, and we shouldn't do it via walkie-talkie. He just doesn't listen, and he makes decisions that end up hurting people. So where do you land, Paul?
Growth isn't the right word, but I do think it was a necessary step for him to be able to cope in this missed environment. What he's learning by doing things like killing his brother may not be that useful to his life as a children's book author in his real life, but I think it's going to get a lot worse on his way to the mall. I don't think he's going to hop in an ambulance or whatever and drive to the mall next week. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think he's going to run into something terrible again, and he's going to have to do something else terrible in order to get out of that.
What kind of thing do you think is going to come up next? Who are we going to start focusing on?
We might shift to the mall next week. And go, you know, with that crew and all of the animosity probably building between the two camps, the, you know, Alex Copeland is a liar, fallout, all that stuff. Might get some confrontations between Eve and Alex and Jay, because Jay may come to feel emboldened by this new revelation from another adult in the community.
How do we feel about Brian and Brian's story? Do you think that he could be actually right up at the front, or no way, we've got to like abandon everybody at the hospital and go over and deal with the mall people? Because we didn't deal with Alex and any of them this whole time.
The structure of the episodes has not followed any particular pattern. So
how do you feel about that? Do you wish that it would follow a particular pattern?
I do. I think I do like, it's not that I need them to be formulaic, but
I liked the flashback and everybody kind of having their own story stuff going on. I liked that in this one. I thought this was actually very well structured. I was very interested in it. it upped the level of like danger for everyone on all fronts. Like everything was at a higher level. It wasn't just like, oh no, you know, are we going to let them out of the jail cell or not? It was like life and death, but at their own hands. Very dramatic.
I think it was the best episode so far, really.
I think so too. I really do. So let's talk about the waiting room for a second, about the title. Okay, so when I think of waiting room, I actually think of things like waiting for someone in surgery or a dad waiting in the waiting room to find out if you have a boy or a girl, right? Mm-hmm. These are the kinds of things that I think of waiting room. So for me, the entire flashback and everything about the fact that he's not the bio dad, for me, there's that waiting room tie-in for me. Somehow, I don't know, it connects for me. It's hard for me to explain, but maybe just in the spirit of it, you guys can sort of see where I'm going with that. Certainly the waiting room having to do with like Mia talking about her mom and having spent a lot of time at the hospital in the psych ward. You get the idea that Mia probably spent a lot of time in a waiting room.
If that was true.
If it was true. Then, of course, you have Adrian sitting in that waiting room and looking
for another victim.
I don't even know what. Like, I felt like that was something. There was something there to that waiting room. I don't know. What other things did you guys come up with? When you guys watched, please give us some feedback on dailyreview.com or come on over on Twitter to Daily Review. We would love to hear, what do you think that waiting room is referring to in this particular case?
Well, that's all we have for this week. This episode of the Daily Review podcast is brought to you in partnership with 3ifbyspace.net. That's the word 3, T-H-R-E-E, ifbyspace.net, where you will find coverage on The Mist and other science fiction shows, as well as links to our podcast and all kinds of news and interesting things that are happening in the world of science fiction. Thanks a lot. Catch us on iTunes or your preferred podcast software. Our website, dailyreview.com, that's D-A-L-E-Y review.com, Facebook or Twitter, or wherever you find us, please leave us a comment and a rating to let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for listening, pod people. Thanks for listening to my mom and dad.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Just go home, folks.